Okay, so before we get started on what we're going to talk through today, which will, at least in the beginning, have some relevance to what you'll have on Thursday as a kind of example setting up some of that. Questions about how Thursday is going to shake out?
How many problems should be
in the test? Same kind of format as the previous one. So three or four problems with multiple parts for each. Very likely... very likely, you know, if you didn't get A or B, assume this form for D and E, or like we kind of did the first time. So pretty much the same format. Definitely know how to draw a root locus. Definitely know how to talk about response characteristics based on plural locations. Be able to talk about response characteristics based on pole locations. Yeah, that overview, I posted the overview of what, you know, the material covered is on the website. There's some problems up. Basically draw, you know, it's a bunch of problems, draw the root locus more or less. I'll get those solutions up. It'll be late tonight probably. Another way you could check those, you know, if you're drawing root locus and you want to check your answers, right, there's those example Jupyter notebooks that have how to draw root locus in the Jupyter notebook where you could just plug in your transfer function and check your answer pretty easily. Other questions? I think that's on the table for that simple of a mass spring damper system. You guys should be able to model that in your sleep, basically, at this point in your careers, I think. Particularly given, you know, most of you guys had Hibbler and the dynamics God. So make sure you can model simple systems. I mean, it'll be pendulums and springs and dampers, nothing fancy. There, I'm not sure if I posted the PID one yet. I was working on one where it's some like sliders for K and P and I, or KP, KI, KD. I think I haven't posted that one yet because I wasn't happy with some of it in terms of how clear it read and stuff.
And the supplemental stuff, you have basic PID stuff.
Yeah, there's some loops, there's some stuff there. I think in terms of tuning your controller, be able to outline, you know, talk about how you might tune it and what pole locations need to go to. General trends, if I, you know, certainly that table of trends, whether you increase, you know, increase KP, this happens. If you hold everything else constant, if you increase KD, this happens. Everything else held constant. So I wouldn't expect to need to get to 3.27 as the proportional gain. Right, that's not kind of what I'm looking for. I'm looking for higher level understanding in terms of increase the proportional gain, we'll do this to the response, that kind of thing. And maybe to outline the steps of how you would get to a number with, you know, Ziegler-Nichols or some kind of manual tuning.
Will we be provided with the steps for solving root locus like the ones in the book, or should we just memorize those?
You should know those, yeah. I might add the equations, but they won't be labeled as, you know, like the equation sheet before. Mm-hmm. Right? It's I'll try to get that up tonight too, so you can take a look at it. The equations there, but they won't be labeled what exactly they are. So you'll have to kind of know.
By model a simple system, you mean like write out a transfer function for it? Or?
Yeah. So let's do that right now. I think that'll answer that question. And if you think of questions while we're working through the first part of this that were relevant to the test, let me know. But this first part shakes out as kind of something like you would be asked to do on the test. And here's a system. What we want, our goal, the goal of goal is to move mass M to some position XD, desired position, right? And we're measuring the current position of M as X. Okay. So another way to write that goal is to make XD equal X, or X equal XD. So if, given the system, where do we start on this?
Equation
of motion, right? So if your equation of motion, to start on your free body, start your equation of motion, draw a free body diagram. Okay, we have the applied force, of course. What else do we have? We have some gravity. Spring and damper. Anything else? No, I think that's it. So we're only allowing motion in the horizontal direction, so N equals mg for all time. It doesn't move in that direction. So we can write F equals ma, or ma equals F in the order we're writing it. What's the force from the spring? So I heard a couple different things. We have Kx, yeah. So we have one side of the current spring's connected to ground. So we're no XD in this yet. Yeah, so just hang on to that thought for a second. And the damping force is Cx dot. Can collect terms. And of course we can write it in that kind of parameterized form in terms of natural frequency and damping ratio, where all right. So we have some equation of motion describing the system. We can write a transfer function from this, right? So how would I do that?
Put it in Laplace domain.
Laplace domain. Sure, so you're working from this form.
Yeah.
You could just as easily work from here. Right. I'm going to do that. All right. And transfer function is output over input. Right, so our output in this case is X. Input's that force. There we go. Transfer function for our system. All right. That's what we would call, right, that's the physical system we're trying to control. So that's going to be our plant. Right? So we have, so far, some part of our block diagram. Okay, so I want to move M in some way to make X go to XD. What should I do?
I'm gonna
need some kind of controller, sure. Okay. Some kind of feedback thing, I think, is what you're hinting at. And we end up with a block diagram that looks something like this, where our reference command, our input, is x. So we're going to compare where we want to be with where we are, get some error, act on that in some way to generate a force to move the mass. Okay. So what should GC be? We had one recommendation for a full PID controller. Probably could do well with just PD. Okay. Any other choices? Recommendations? I'm going to agree with that, but there's other ways you could do this.
Not as good, though.
Not as good? Maybe. I don't know. There's a lot we could put in GC. What I want to do first, we're going to get to a PD. What I want to do first is actually look at just the proportional control for this case. Look at this case really quickly first. All right. Because even though it's kind of a little simplistic, it will give us. So.
We can give you a starting KP value.
Maybe, yeah. So, in this case, GC is going to be KP. Right? So. Okay, and then our closed loop transfer function. X over XD is what? You know what's that? I think I heard all the right terms there. Okay, so even just from that, what do we know about what KP is going to do for us? Yeah, so if I increase KP, right, this whole term now is my natural frequency of the closed loop system. Right, so we have the physical natural frequency of the plant, and then we're going to increase that if we crank up on KP, right, for the closed loop feedback control system. So what does that do for us in terms of the response? Faster or slower? Faster rise time, let's say, or slower rise time. Faster rise time, right? What's settling time? Does KP have any effect on settling time? Right. So, I don't know it's really going to help us a whole lot in terms of tracking XD. Well, let's look at that in a little bit more detail. I think we can look at it in this terminal, in this framework as well. What are the so we're going to draw a root locus. What are the open loop pole locations? Open loop pole location. We're going to draw a root locus. I would spend a minute to commit to memory the pole locations for a second order underdamped system. This is going to show up. the complex conjugates. What is the real part?
The real part is zeta, or 2 zeta omega n.
No, not quite. So, so that's one I think you just remember if you work enough of these problems. So let's just draw some poles. They're going to be complex conjugate pair. Okay. That's actually the distance. And we know what else do we know right away from that those pole locations? Okay. How do you know that right away? Well, even without drawing asymptotes or anything, what can we say about these two poles right here?
They have some kind of damping.
Have some kind of damping, right? So they're away from the imaginary axis. What on this plot shows can relate to the damping? Yes. So what is this distance here? N, what is this angle?
The arc cosine of omega d over omega n. Zeta omega n.
Right, so I'm going to actually change that to phi to match our notes from earlier in the semester. So that angle tells you about the damping ratio as well. So from just those pole locations, just kind of a little bit of review of what we've been talking through for the last month in some sense, right? Is that by moving around those pole locations, we have effect on the damping ratio and natural frequency, and of course, as a result, the damped natural frequency. Okay, so that's just the open loop, guys. Walking through our root locus procedure. We don't have any poles on the real axis, so that part kind of goes out the door. All right. What's our asymptote? Let's do that calculation real quick. Even though, yeah, if you've seen this before, you know it. What's the location of the asymptotes? Not the angle, the location. We all got that. So this is 2. In this case, we get that. Right, no zeros. The complex conjugate part cancels in some of the poles. Sorry. All right. The angle, yes, is plus or minus 90. What's that equation? So in this case, we get plus or minus 90 degrees. So kind of our asymptotes are right along that vertical line I've already drawn. Okay. We have a set of complex conjugate poles. What else do I need to figure out for the root locus then? Yeah, angle of departure. How do I calculate that? So in this case, we look at this guy, what's his angle of departure? So we got 180 minus the angle to the pole, minus 90. So angle of departure is 90, right? So we know here, it's heading out that way. And we know it's symmetric, so there it must be going out that way, right at 90. We have asymptotes there, so that kind of constrains the rest of the plot. There's our root locus for this system. Okay, so that kind of confirms what we already looked at from the, or it does confirm what we already looked at from the closed loop transfer function. Right, if I increase k, right? Remember, as we move from the open loop pole away, we're increasing k, right? Omega n, that distance is getting bigger, right? So the closed loop natural frequency is increasing. Damping increase or decrease? Damping decrease. Yeah, so, right? So this is constant. Omega n's getting better, bigger. Damping has to be going down. What about settling time? What's the approximation for settling the time for a second order underdamped system? Exactly right. So our approximation for settling time is 4 over this parameter, right? And that guy's not changing at all. Settling time is always about the same, right? And that is approximation, but it's pretty much the same here. Okay, so the KP doesn't really help us so much in getting a whole lot closer to our goal. Our rise time, KP can help our rise time, but settling time remains the same, so it still takes us the same amount of time to get to XD. How do I know what?
You said the settling time was usually about the same.
It's settling time, our approximation we did for a settling time of a second order underdamped system is 4 over zeta omega n. Right? So this zeta omega n is always fixed, so settling time is always the same.
So if you are moving your pole up,
yeah, zeta is changing.
Well, that's what I meant by damping. The damping has to change itself.
Yeah, it's changing, but it actually has to go down. Right? Because omega n's getting bigger, zeta has to be going down. Because that zeta omega n's constant. Right, so we have constant settling time. Rise time's going to be faster. So we actually oscillate around our desired place relative to where we kind of get there longer. But the total settling time is the same. So just proportional gain doesn't really help us too much in this case.
And where are our asymptotes?
Plus or minus 90. So we're actually running right along them in this case. Okay. So we need, as was suggested from the beginning, maybe PD control. What's the transfer function for a PD controller?
KP plus KDS.
Okay. If we did the closed loop transfer function for our PD controller, right, it still has this form, we just have a different GC now. It ends up being being that. Right, so are we going to be able to change our closed loop damping ratio now?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So, and we're going to be able to kind of speed up the response at the same time by picking KP like we did, like we could do here. But now we can also change zeta, right, for the closed loop system. So what does, we still have the same plant, right? So those poles are in the same place. What does the PD controller add here?
An
open loop zero, right? So maybe it's there. Okay, so I'm going to sketch this root locus. We won't go through the equations this time. What do I know about the real axis?
You're going to have a root locus
to infinity. Yep. So somewhere, one of the, how many different separate loci do I have? Two, right? So I have more poles than zeros.
You have two poles.
And two poles, so we have two separate loci so far. Okay. Asymptotes, I know n minus m in this case is 1, right? So I have two poles, 1, 0. So I'm going to asymptote set 180. So if they're at 180, all right, we can calculate that breakaway point if we want, and what we'll find is this looks something like this, where one of these poles comes here and goes off to infinity, one of these closed loop poles comes here, goes to the zero. Right? Remember, open loop poles go to open loop zeros, or closed loop poles go from open loop poles to open loop zeros. Yeah, it doesn't matter, really. Yeah.
How do we know it's shaped like that?
Do all this for that system.
So the asymptotes and all that won't change?
No, it does. That's what I'm saying. You'd have to work through all those equations for this particular system. But I'm kind of skipping that part because we got other stuff to get to. And this is a really common configuration, right? You have a flexible system with a PD or with 1-0 PD controller. You can know the shape something like this. Question? Oh, okay. It's on the verge of a question. And actually, I did walk through these in the notes if you wanted to review. Okay, so what's that going to do for us? Mm-hmm. So let's maybe talk about a couple there. So if I can push poles to somewhere infinitely close to that real axis, what do I get? What's the response look like?
Critically damped.
Yeah, it'll be critically damped right where, they're infinitely close to the real axis. Repeated poles on the real axis, critically damped. What does that mean about the response? It's not oscillatory anymore. So that can be good, right? Okay. If I had some spec on settling time, how would I map that out to where I would need to put the poles?
The damping increases. You could use that equation to solve for.
Yes. Well, I know settling time, right, is 4 over zeta omega n. I want to meet it farther to the left. So if I have zeta omega m, we know to the left is faster. So I have some spec that might set a necessary zeta omega n for me to meet a settling time requirement. So if I have that being the case, I know I have to get those closed loop holes to the left of that line to meet my settling time spec. I might have some overshoot spec, right? What's that overshoot equation? Okay, so you could have some spec here, solve it for zeta, and that would give you where angle they need to be at. Right, and hopefully those two things are not in conflict. If they are, you got to use something other than the PD controller to meet most specs. Right, so that this gives you zeta. Zeta would give you that phi angle that the poles have to be at. And you'd have to be inside there. All right, so if you have some settling time spec and this overshoot spec, you need to be in this. You'd have to be in that part of the locus to meet those two specs. So keep bumping up K until you're in there, and you're good to go. Okay. Would I ever want to stop right here? Right, what we said is, hey, these two poles, you know, right there at the intersection, the first place where both constraints are required, satisfies the two specs I have on the performance. So I'm meeting my requirements. Should I stop there?
No.
2 votes for no. Any votes for yes? Any votes for a maybe? Yeah, there's a maybe. I'm voting for a maybe. We don't really have the whole picture, right? What am I going to have to do? What's the difference between those two locations in terms of the system performance, system response? Oscillatory, so you're getting less oscillatory, you're having less overshoot. That's right. You are settling a little bit faster, less so as you get, you know, as it starts to flatten out. At the expense of what?
Time.
No, not necessarily, because we have our settling time is actually getting shorter.
Rise time
is going to be increasing a little bit there as the damping gets higher. What else? Overshoot's going to be related to the zeta as well, so we get more damping or less overshoot, actually. How about this? Yeah, you want it to respond faster and settle faster, you're going to have to push on it harder. Right. So you are going to get increased actuator requirements as you keep pushing higher and higher gains here. Right. So there is some penalty there. Maybe it doesn't matter for your system, maybe it does. Right, so we haven't outlined a spec on any kind of peak forces or energy use or anything like that. But that would drive, you know, where do I, you know, I have this whole region of closed loop poles that are acceptable. There's other stuff that would come into play and which one I actually want to pick in terms of those two specs.
So if we put them close to the real axis, then we have to push on it really hard?
Yeah, you have to push on it harder, basically. Perhaps, yeah. So if you're looking at a minimal energy case, yeah, because as you're pushing the higher and higher gains, you're essentially making, right, our F here, to back up to our...
Your GC would increase.
Right, so what we're doing with this PD controller P KD is that. Right, so the force our PD controller pushes up, pulls on the mass with, right, is proportional to the difference in these guys and proportional to the rate of change of those, right, in air. Right? So if I keep bumping up KP or KD, right, this spring's getting stiffer. For the same motion in XD, it's more force on the mass. Okay. Questions about that? Yeah.
So to draw a root locus, you have to hold one of those like constants.
That's right.
So we held KP constant to draw that?
KD's constant.
Oh, KD?
KD's constant, yeah.
So that's just increasing.
This is increasing KP, yeah. I want to change KD, it changed the location of that to zero, is what happens. Yeah, the zero is at minus KP over KD. Right. So by look, what you pick is that ratio, more or less. Right. And yeah, you can change that ratio and move that zero around to play with performance a little bit. So you get this kind of multi-parameter tuning is a bit of an art in some sense, and that's at least from the root locus perspective. There are state space ways to do that truly mathematically optimally. Okay, other questions?
So, what happens so if we had possibly a PI controller for this instead?
PI or PID? Just PI?
Yeah.
Okay, so our plant poles are going to be the same location. We can't change those. What does the integral gain add? Or the integral controller add? Yeah, pole where? Okay, so then we know we have that, because we only have one pole to the right. What else can we say about this? What's going to happen? Yeah, it has other effects though, right? Because it increases overshoot. So I'm asking, right? You could figure out. I actually don't remember this. Blanking on what this one usually looks like. This should go. I don't want to draw it. It goes out that way, right? Yeah, so they should go this way. Yeah. So, yeah, we can get perhaps faster performance that way. Where did they go this way? I'm going to do it real quick. So we got zero, still minus. So we got two poles, three poles. So n minus m is 3, 2k plus 1. At 0, we got 1 third. And then we have 1.
1, you'd have 180.
6090/180. Is that right? Three poles, 2k plus 1, n minus.
So it would be 0, 1, and 2, right? 0 yeah, would give you 60, 1 would give you 180, and 2 would give you. Three
yeah, poles. That's what I'm missing.
So -60.
Yeah, that makes more sense. Arithmetic. 60. And zeros, two. So 2/3 this guy, so he's actually there somewhere, plus or minus 60.
So where did all those numbers come from?
The asymptote calculations. So this guy, yeah. So there's some point on the PID controller where it goes unstable. Right, these break away something like that. Yep.
Tell me again why exactly if it was a plus or minus 60, why are they that way? To the right instead of to the...
So you got 60, 180 for this pole.
Yes.
And then the calculation actually gives you... Minus 60, so it gives you 300. So it's 300 this way,
right.
Or minus 60,
oh, I see.
If you do the calculation.
Yeah.
But we often will write it plus or minus 60 because we know the locus should be symmetric about that axis. So there's your answer for the PI controller. Eventually, I go unstable somewhere. And then as I increase the gains with just the PI controller, my settling time is actually increasing. Right, I'm getting closer. These poles are getting closer to the real axis. So zeta omega n is getting shorter or smaller. Settling time is going up.
So I can settle it faster, but the problem is that it can get unstable.
No, settling time is going up.
Yeah. Also, it's taking more time to settle.
Yes.
And it would also have more overshoot.
And yeah, that angle is getting larger. Like you're getting less damped as well. So you're going to overshoot more. So PI controller alone is not really going to do a lot for you here.
So it's safe to assume for most systems like that, a PI controller of itself won't be the best for some systems similar to this.
Yeah, mass spring damper and position control, yeah. You need something else.
What would be an example of something it is good for?
A PI controller? A system that has, let's say, friction or some kind of other viscous damping to ground, or some examples in the notes, I think. You're looking at steady, some kind of system that might be already overdamped, let's say, so you don't have to really worry about adding damping to the system. It's got its own pretty high damping. Yeah, yeah, right, because then you add a zero, and then this whole shape changes, right? I'll save that for you. It's a good exercise for Thursday, yeah. Okay, so, given all that, we've only looked at really one thing I can do with GC. We said, hey, this GC, he can be P or PI or PD or PID, but they're all kind of the same controller. What else can I do? Any idea at all?
Some other controller.
That's a good idea. So you're saying feedback F two.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's like if I know that I can't get to a certain force.
Sure. Yeah, we'll have that quite often where it's quite often what you'll see actually is that kind of be a part of GC. There's just a check on max and min or some rate. Yep. Let's see if I can get rid of that. I'm going to propose one to you and tell me what you think. You can leave all of that for right now. Okay, I'm going to start with a slightly, if I did that.
Well, then GC, GP would just equal
1. So, exactly right. Then, what does that mean for this transfer function?
Xt equals x.
Yeah. Or x equals xd, right? So then we would say, or this looks pretty good to me.
What are all those dashes?
Those are exclamation points. Because that's what we want. And we're saying it's true for all time. If we do this. Huh.
There's no way that can be.
There's no way that can be done. It's not that easy. Sure. Okay, so let's look at maybe this can be done. Let's take a look at it. Have the same plant. Let's work with our second order flexible system. If we're saying that GC is the inverse of GP, what does that mean GC looks like? Yeah. It's driving me nuts, sorry. Okay, so what do we know about its poles or zeros?
Has no poles, has two zeros.
Two zeros, where are those zeros located?
At zeta, omega,
So, okay, we get no dynamics effectively. Well, we're just saying they change identically. So, what's the problem with this? There are problems. You're not going to learn a lot about that locus, that's right. No, we're stable here.
You can't tune anything, though. So.
Can't tune anything.
Well, you can't change anything.
Okay, well, let me maybe address that point. Let's call that bar.
Well, why would you change anything if it's already perfect?
Why would I change anything if it's already perfect? So each one of those now I'm writing as a bar, and that is my estimate of the actual natural frequency and damping ratio. Yep.
Your controller would be off, and you'd have no way to account for that variation.
There we go. There's one of the big problems, right? This assumes if these are going to cancel exactly, which is what we need for this to be true, right? I have to know the model perfectly. How often am I going to do that?
Never.
Never, ever.
Never going to have a perfect.
Never in your whole life. are you going to have a perfect model? Okay. So that's one big problem. Okay. What else are we ignoring here so far? So that's one big problem, right? That it's never going to exactly match. Ignoring the error, I'm also ignoring what does F have to be, you think, to make for me to move an inertia exactly the way I want it, no matter what the input is. Yeah, I'd have to be able to have an infinite force to make a system do exactly what I want at every time instant, no matter what kind of command I'm giving. So we can't do that either. So there's some problems with this. Okay. So we can't really blindly just do this. But it does give us an idea of something we maybe can do. So let's talk through that. I'm going to come back over here. No, this won't be on the test. So the root locus talking those pole locations is just kind of motivation for I can put something else in GC. But also a decent review, I think. Okay, I'm gonna leave that one up. Maybe. Get rid of that. All right. I'm going to say, well, if I can't do this inversion thing, I'm going to propose that for GC. Anybody have any idea what that is? Okay, that's fine. I don't expect you to. I was just curious. Okay. I'm also going to propose some values here. I'm going to say, well, let be pi over omega d, so half of the damp period for whatever system we're trying to control. And I want A1 plus A2 to be 1, which means I can write A2 that way. So what I'm actually like here, given that GP let's say it's a flexible system kind of like the one we just looked at. What I'd like to be true is for my controller to have no energy at the flexible modes of my plant. So I want GC to have no energy at the flexible mode of my plant. What does that mean in terms of pole or zero locations? Any ideas? Or what do I want the value of the transfer function to be at these flexible pole locations? One. Okay. Remember that we can write, and we're going to get to more of this in 2 weeks, right? I can also take and write that, and we kind of did that one solution, and write J omega or I omega in there. Right? So I can write, Laplace in some ways is a frequency representation, frequency domain representation of the plant. So I want this thing to have no energy at my system natural frequency. What I mean is, well, make that an I to match my notation. Right, I want, right, this is the energy or kind of representation of the energy of that system at its plus or minus poles, flexible poles. So I want GC to have no energy there. So what I'm going to do, basically, is figure out what I need A1 and A2 to be to make that happen. So let's take a look. Right, I want and I'm going to say, well, just for now, make that sigma and I omega. And we'll see if we can tune those to where this is a zero. All right. So also can write omega d. Okay, sorry. I'm just going to write this up.
What's that? S equals
sigma plus I omega. Okay. Oh, that's what I missed. This, and then that's not going to fit. I'm proposing a value for A2, and you'll see where this is going in the next few minutes. And if I do that, I end up with this, which actually you can get to from that equation I wrote as well, but save it some writing. All right, so what do I need to happen for this equation to be true? So I could set A1 to 0, I think is what you're getting at. Right, or I can factor out an A1. The exponential term has to be negative 1. That's actually ends up being a plus. Once we do that math. All right. That's way more confusing than it needed to be. Apologies. But we're getting to somewhere cool. All right. So we can split that into its real and imaginary terms. Right? So we can write, we can just break out those terms of the exponential, look at the real, group the real and imaginary. I'm going to say I need that to be negative 1. Right? That's just the exponential term. I broke the two pieces. Well, I'm going to say now, too many pieces. Let's just say we want that one to be 1, that one to be minus 1. That's going to get us to our solution. Let's see if we can make that work. All right. Okay. So, when does that work? Well, when sigma, does that give me 1 for the first term?
Yes.
Right, the exponential that first term becomes exponential 0, anything to the 0 is just 1. That seems to work. How about the second term? If we make that negative 1, well, let's look. I know this is just right. So then when is that guy equal to minus 1? For what choice of omega? Inside the parentheses of which one?
The sign.
Well, we want the sign has. We want this guy to go to 0. Right? We don't want an imaginary component. So we get minus 1 plus 0i. So we need this guy to go to minus 1. What does that mean for omega?
Omega to equal omega d.
So we want. So we found then that for our choice of S, and our kind of assumptions about T2 and about A2, that this controller has zero energy at this pole location. Okay? How does that relate to the pole location of a second order flexible system? That is it. Exactly right. So if I take and I make these choices, right? If I've picked, if I know omega d about my system, right, which we're going to have a decent idea about, we've had all semester, right? And I can pick A1 and A2 to fit these guys. I can get zero energy at that flexible mode. What does that mean for the response then? If I'm tuning an EQ, right, sound EQ, and I drop all the energy out at some frequency, what happens? I turn the volume down all the way, turn the gain down all the way at a certain frequency range. Nothing happens where? You guys know what I mean by EQ, right? Anybody? Yeah, an equalizer, like a sound equalizer. I can tune the gain for each frequency range of a sound signal, right?
But if there's no sound coming out, that's useless.
Maybe, unless I want no sound.
Well, that's what you said, turn the volume all the way down.
Well, turn the gain of that frequency range all the way down. Right. So yeah, there's no sound in that frequency range. So for our flexible system, if I turn the gain, all the volume all the way down, I turn the energy all the way down at the flexible part of that response.
So you're setting your GC to be zero.
Well, GC is not zero for all frequencies. It's just zero here.
But at that frequency, GC would be zero, which means you would have no force output. Which means...
Okay, so let's approach it from Maxwell's way. If I excite a system exactly at its natural frequency, what happens? It's going to oscillate forever. So it's undamped. You know, it's going to go off forever or go to some high peak if it's damped. Okay. So what I'm proposing is if my signal has some frequency content that's at the natural frequency of the system, right? I want to get rid of that. I don't want any excitation in my flexible part modes of my system. I don't want any kind of forcing close to the frequency of the system. You guys have probably not heard of the Fourier transform yet. It might show up in some calc classes. Okay. So this guy Fourier, if you take vibrations next semester, you're going to spend quite a bit of time talking about it, says that we can write any repeating signal. And strictly speaking, any repeating signal, roughly speaking, any signal as an infinite series of sines and cosines. Right. So any command has frequency content at a bunch of different frequencies. So what we're saying is don't let any of the frequency content close to my system's natural frequency come through. What that's going to do for us is enable us to have responses that don't have any residual vibration. So if we use this controller, we'll be able to have some kind of step command, or any kind of command we want, and by the time that thing is finished, we have no vibration left over. So we have no overshoot. Settling time is the same as our rise time. Nice, beautiful response. That's kind of the math to get there from Laplace domain, which we've been talking through. This is really a more intuitive thing than it seems. Right? And really what's happening here, let's look back at the transfer function. Anybody figured out what that transfer function is yet? No, okay. The transfer function is actually just an impulse. So we have an impulse at time 0 at A1, right? And if we gave that to our flexible system, what happens? Hit a flexible system with an impulse. What's it going to do? It's going to oscillate. That's right. Running out of colors. So we'll create some oscillation. And maybe we have some damping. Looks something like that. Okay. A2 is also an impulse. What's e to the minus st? Have you seen that in a Laplace table yet? E to the minus st is just a delay, pure delay in time of t2. Right, in this case. So I'm going to say, well, we have an impulse of amplitude A2 delayed by some time. If it's the same system, natural frequency is the same, damping ratio is the same, all that kind of good stuff. All right, so... I'm creating two separate oscillations if I'm thinking about it from just impulses. Okay, so we're saying the system's linear. So then, what's the total response? If I have a linear system and I have, well, it's a particular property we talked about probably one of the first days of class. Linear system, I have two different inputs to a system. What's the total output? Superposition. Superposition is the idea, right? So superposition, just to review, because it's important. All right, if y1's a function of x1, right, y2 is that same function for x2, and that is true. And that holds for all linear systems. The response is just the sum of those two responses then.
After A2.
After A2, it's 0, right? They cancel for all time here.
But you're
gonna have some kind of between A1 and A2, I get this hump. Okay. So what's the problem with this? Well, we're going on infinitely, but we have no oscillation out there. Right? For all time after A2, we're at 0. There's 0 vibration for all time after time T2. Do we drive around systems with impulses? No. Right? Impulse. We don't drive around systems by hitting them like that. Okay? So this idea seems pretty good. But we don't drive systems this way. Okay? Well, what's going to turn out is that we can actually get to a place through an operator called a convolution. Convolution of continuous functions can get complicated. Convolution of impulse sequences. It's really easy. Right? So let's look. Let's say I have some original reference command. Right? Well, what I'm going to do is convolve this. Convolution operator with that sequence of impulses. And the convolution process we'll need is actually pretty easy. So if I draw A1. Okay, so if we're starting at 0, let's call that 1. All I need to do to convolve this is multiply this function by A1 and do that at 0. So in this case, we'll have A1 times 1 is just A1. Okay. Then I take my original command, multiply it by A2, but wait, delay that in time by T2. Okay? So I wait over.
Sorry.
Yeah, that's all right. So that's A2. And then my total command is just the sum of those. Right? Is the final step of that convolution. And we've said back over there that A1 plus A2 equals 1. So our total command gets to the same final place. For all points over here, it's just A1 plus A2. Right. So what has the impulse sequences done? This convolution process is take that idea and now through the convolution basically passed on the vibration properties of that impulse sequence to this resulting command in orange. One way to think about this one, this is kind of a simple one to think about. This impulse sequence is taking my original step command, this is going to create some vibration. and broken it into two smaller steps. Kind of delayed one of them in time a little bit. So this guy would create, start some vibration. That one cancels it. So if you're looking at the response of these, right, I have a flexible system. I might get some response like that to the step command. The response to this, if I've designed it correctly, is that. We have zero residual vibration for this system.
Isn't that essentially a combustion engine?
Combustion engine. I'm not following.
When you're taking impulses from the combustion and then you're using that to combine with your...
I think the difference there is that basically I'm applying each one of these. I don't actually, these impulses never touch the actual system.
Okay.
Right? It's what I give to the, what I give as the input now, so my reference command becomes the orange thing instead of the step.
Okay.
Right. So what I issue to the system is the orange one, light orange, and if I design it correctly, I get this darker orange one. Right.
Well, aren't you just taking the step input and making it into two?
That is the effect of using this impulse sequence, this convolution process, for a step command. And yeah, that's a convenient way to think about it in this case. But what's nice about this is it applies even if this is not a step. This could be some S-curve, some smooth thing. It could be an operator's joystick input. This is going to work for all that because this has zero energy at that oscillatory frequency. So my operator can push and pull on this thing, try to push and pull on all it wants. Anything that's going to excite vibration gets removed by that. The operator gives it, the original command is this. It gets operated on by this guy, which is kind of GC. And what goes to the system is that. The result of that convolution.
So that's the thing you did with the cranes.
That's the thing we do with the cranes. That's right. Nope. You're an expert in crane control now. What's the penalty for this? Yeah, so the command itself is increased, right? So the command itself now is T2 long, where over here it was of zero length. So I want to minimize that time. But what really matters for most systems is their system response, not the command time. Right. So a week from today, we're going to talk more about this.
In the end, it takes less time to move your stuff on the crane because you're spending less time trying to steady it.
Exactly right. So that's what I mean by the time of the response matters more than the time of command for most systems.